A series of 13 rate filings from 9 health insurers seeking average rate hikes of 20% or more for the individual market and almost 15% for small groups. Health insurance, I tell you, it's always a controversial topic. And I put the man I know best who could talk about this on the spot in the hot seat. And many of you call him Alan. I call him Dad. Alan Sheketoff is here. He is one of the he always gets embarrassed when I say this, but he is a top insurance, a health insurance broker here in Connecticut. He's an award winning broker. And I am very proud to call him my father. And a lot of you have asked, actually, personally, have reached out to both me and my colleague Paul Pacelli asking for my dad to come on and comment and explain what's going on. So good morning, Alan. Thank you for being here. How are you?
You could call me Dad. Good morning, Melissa.
Thanks, Dad. I'm good. How are you?
Not bad.
Okay. So let's back up. Let's talk about where these price hikes are even sort of coming from when it comes to insurers. What can you tell us?
Well, first of all, there's two distinctive markets that you just mentioned. There's the individual market, and then there's the group employer market. First of all, there's many more carriers that are involved in the group markets because there's more that participate, whereas in the individual market, there's only two in the state of Connecticut, those two being Anthem Blue Cross and ConnectiCare. That's it. So which would you like me to address first?
I mean, I think probably for my listeners, most of them would be in the individual market, and then we could certainly go to the group market. I know that's Derek couldn't sleep last night because of the phone call he has to make later today for his group, which I told everybody about yesterday. But let's do the individual market just because that would be more of my listeners would fall under that category.
Okay. And we have over a couple thousand of those. So, yeah, that's a market that we're very near and dear to. So basically, here's the deal. What happens typically in the right around the midpoint of the year, all carriers are actually forced to file what we call their rate increases, not what they're actually going to get, but what they're asking for. And what happened with the two main carriers, ConnectiCare and Anthem, ConnectiCare filed for, I want to say it was between 20% and 24%. These are averages, so they've got many different plan designs. Each one has a different amount of an increase, so on an average, they're saying close to 24%, and then with Anthem, it was only 3%, but that could be a little misleading because Anthem was significantly higher than ConnectiCare is right now, so even with a much smaller increase, I'm not sure how much different their rates are going to be for 2023. However, there's some caveats. Anthem right now, as a company, is a big national company where they have networks of Blue Cross all over the country. However, in the Connecticut, through Access Health, our health exchange, they have no access to leave Connecticut at all. You can't go to New York if you need something, or Massachusetts, or Florida, or wherever else you may need to go.
You're strictly in Connecticut.
It's a Connecticut-only plan, and they don't advertise that very well. I know in the very beginning when that happened, way back in 2017, when there were five carriers in the market, United, Aetna, and a company called Healthy CT at that time, they both, well, the two that are still in business, Aetna and United, both experienced very, very heavy losses, over $1 billion each in the individual market. So they decided to exit the market completely. Mm-hmm. It's not like either of those two companies are not profitable. They're both doing extremely well. But in the individual market, under the rules that we have with our insurance department, they felt they couldn't make a profit. So they just decided to exit the market. Healthy CT dropped out completely. They're out of business.
Right, I remember that. Dad, what are the chances that we bolster up the market again? Because that's a question I've asked of state leaders before. Like, one of the answers I would think is if we make it a more competitive market, and the only way to do that is to bring more carriers in. But what's the likelihood of that?
Probably, I would say unlikely, although it would not surprise me if at least one of those major carriers would come back into the market, that one most likely being Aetna. because they have been in the market before. They did drop out of all the markets nationwide, but they've already started to enter back into them in some states. It would not surprise me. In fact, I'm expecting at some point for Aetna to re-enter the market here in Connecticut. What I was starting to say, though, the advantage that ConnectiCare has right now over Anthem, which is why they've got 95% of the business, they do now access what they call their Flex network, which just gives them access to the entire United States. So their plan is a national plan, their plans. They have five of those options amongst the many that are available, and not at a significantly higher price point. So they are more, they're looked upon more, I would say, favorably at this point because Anthem's more restricted. I don't know how much that will change for this year, but it looks like a lot of people, certainly in our client base, with Fairfield County being a big part of that, a lot of people need to go into New York, and without having access to New York with Anthem, they would favor ConnectiCare.
We're talking to my dad this morning. Many of you know him as Alan Chekatoff. He owns MacMan Insurance Associates. It's actually in Fairfield, Connecticut. And he is a very well-known, longstanding health insurance broker, has won many awards over the years and has been recognized for his work, especially in the individual and group market. So let's talk about groups, Dad. This is a pretty unbelievable jump if, in fact, these increases go into effect. And we haven't really talked about, like, the Rescue Act, for example, having anything to do with this. So let's dive into that.
Okay. Although I'm going to go back a little bit to the individual markets since I'll address your question.
Okay.
In regards to the Rescue Act, mm-hmm. that was that $1.9 trillion bill that passed last April of 2021, two parts of that bill had to do with insurance.
Mm-hmm.
One is over with and done, that being COBRA. It allowed anybody that had been on COBRA or had either not taken COBRA, and COBRA is just by definition an extension of an existing group plan from somebody who leaves the company. What they did is they actually paid those people's premiums for 6 months from April through the end of September, and the companies would get a credit on their tax return. So it wouldn't cost them any money, but they ended up basically giving away free money for these people that were on COBRA. So that's over with. The other part of that bill was significant, and that may or may not impact our rates in a big way, because what happened is the subsidies, the amount of the credit, the amount that actually comes off the top of a rate. So if somebody has a rate for $300 a month, and with the subsidy, it becomes much less than that. A subsidy might be $250, and those are based on your age and your income. If you end up with a $250 subsidy and a $300 rate, you're only having to pay the difference of $50. And we saw a major increase of not only people that were now able to afford the insurance because the subsidies got so much larger, but in the, I'll say, more of the middle class, which I always feel is neglected in our market anyway. We had a lot of people, especially the ones that were in their 50s and 60s as they get older, that had incomes well upward of over the limits that they used to have. For instance, $50,000 and change. If you made more than that as an individual, you got no subsidy, nothing.
Right.
This year, people were making $150,000, and the ones that were in their 50s and 60s, some were getting as much as $1,200 a month subsidy.
Which was a big deal. Okay, so I'm no mathematician. My father will tell you that. I've never been good at math. But if I'm looking at the math here, Dad, so we were talking about the Rescue Plan, the Rescue Act, rather, which was passed back in 2021, and that offered more subsidies for people who didn't even qualify for them prior to this passing. And if it's not extended for, it looks like, another 2 years, that's going to mean people are going to get slapped even harder than what we're worried about in the near future with these increases. Am I looking at that correctly?
You are. And I just want to clarify, and I'll answer that question. When I said that, I think it was 2 days ago in the paper where it said that ConnectiCare was filing 24% increases and Anthem was like 3%, that's not what the final numbers are going to be. That's what they're asking for.
Right.
what normally happens now quickly in a process, they have hearings where they have somebody representing the actual insurance carriers, but then the public, any of us, could go up there and say their mind, speak their mind, say whatever they want to say as to why they don't feel that's fair. Ultimately, the state decides how much they'll allow them to raise the rates. It would not be surprising at all that that 24% becomes 8 or less. We've seen this many, many years. Interestingly, usually the opposite, where Anthem asks for an enormous increase and the state says, no, you can't do that. You have to justify why you need to take so much more money. So it may end up being much less. In regards to, though, your question, basically what will happen from this point now, we'll see. I don't know, because to try and keep this non-political, but basically if Congress, which at the moment is democratically in the majority, if they could extend these subsidies for another 2 years to go all the way to when the next presidential election would be, which is right around open enrollment for 2025, then who knows, you know, the increases that you'll see in our file will be about what they're asking for. However, if that doesn't happen, and quite honestly, the amount of money and the amount of debt and inflation and all the other bad things out there that are upon us, if they decide that, no, we can't give away any more money, no matter how it may impact people, it may end, in which case for this year, where we've had so many new people getting subsidies coming into this market, if those subsidies go away, mostly for those middle-class type people that, you know, make reasonably good incomes but in the past never got a subsidy and this year are getting a very hefty subsidy, if they lose that, that 24% could become as much as 100% increase.
Right, that hurts. I mean, that's brutal, and that's a brutal thing. And I think it's worth. That's something I certainly would love to ask one of our national leaders to talk about that the potential of extending that, because that's a huge issue.
Good question for your Congressman Hines.
Okay. Well, I could certainly talk to Congressman Himes about it when he's on next time. And then really quick, Dad, only because we're running out of time, really quick, just touch on groups.
So with the group market, again, because there are several more carriers, they're all over the place. I mean, depending on, again, they've got many, many different plan designs within each carrier's offerings. Same situation. They could ask for what they feel they want to get, and they'll try to, you know, show why that's necessary. Ultimately, it's up to the insurance department after these hearings and decide what they're actually going to allow them to increase the rates by. They have to really be able to prove why they need the amount of the increases that they're asking for. And this is a process we go through every single year, and the carriers go back and forth, and ultimately where it ends up, there's very few years in the 31 years I've been doing this that I've seen many of the rates go down. Mm-hmm. So the one thing we could always count on is change. That happens all the time in our industry. But rates going down is something we don't often see. So I will say you can expect the rates to be higher next year than they are now.
Really quick, Dan, because we just got a listener question through email. How will this impact seniors on Medicare with a supplement plan?
Has no impact whatsoever. So that's a totally different market, also a big market that we do a lot with, as does my friend Mr. Bob Vontel, who I hear his advertisements now, good for him. The Medicare market is totally separated from the individual under 65 market and also the group market. It's a different pool of business. It's more done on a federal basis, not as much on a state basis. So first of all, a lot of those Advantage plans, which a lot of people are interested in, I'm in one myself, the premium is zero. So if it goes up 20%, 20% of zero is zero. So those haven't changed, many of those plans, for years. Supplements, last year was actually the biggest increase that most of them had gotten in 50 years, and it was about 15%, which is a lot. But typically, Medicare rates don't change very drastically at all. Typically, they're $2, $3, $4 a month, and that's about it. I don't anticipate that changing at all. because that's a market that people, as long as they stay alive, are going to be entering at some point, usually when you hit 65.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, if people have more questions about this, again, my dad's at Macman Insurance right there in Fairfield, and you could certainly pass along your questions to me. I'm sure my dad will come back on before you know it. Thanks, Dad. I really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Melissa. Have a great time today.
Thank you. Thanks, Dad. Appreciate that. Recently, we found out that Connecticut had its first confirmed case of monkeypox, and a lot of you had questions about it, wanted to learn a little bit more and find out exactly what the risk is for you and your family members. Very understandable question. So joining us this morning is Ebony Jackson Shahid. She is the health director in the city of Bridgeport. Good morning, Ebony. Thanks for stopping by. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you back on the show. So first of all, Ebony, I know that monkeypox, it's something that really, up until recent months, it was really not something you heard about here in the United States. So how did it get here?
So through traveling. You know, this is, you know, the time of year where a lot of people like to go on vacation. So a lot of diseases do travel, you know, or get to different continents through international travel.
I guess why now, though? Because hasn't this been an issue for a very long time, like in places of like Africa?
Actually, you know, wherever it's been a little bit more tropical, not just specifically Africa, but, you know, you really can't tell when it comes to disease cycles. Mm. So it's just at this time it's present.
Do you believe, in your professional opinion, that we have more than just a couple of cases here in Connecticut? I know we have one confirmed, but do you believe, sort of like COVID, do you believe that it's much bigger than what we have right now?
Well, I think there's actually been two confirmed cases in Connecticut so far, and information is being updated daily. But, you know, to be honest, unless people really are cognizant of what's going on with their body, you know, it's hard to tell who's actually reporting, who's going to their primary care physicians or their healthcare facilities to really, you know, report the condition. So it's really important to know some of the signs and symptoms and then what you need to do next.
So how do you know, like, what are some symptoms that you should look out for?
So first of all, monkeypox is a rare disease and it's caused by an infection with the monkeypox virus. So it's a virus. And then some of the symptoms of this virus can cause a fever, headache, some muscle aches, swollen lymph nodes, chills. And then you can get a rash on your body that looks like pimples or blisters, particularly on the face, inside of the mouth, different parts of the body like your hands, feet, chest, genitals. And, you know, the illness typically lasts for about 2 to 4 weeks.
And my understanding, Ebony, is this is not like COVID where you could have gotten it airborne. Do you have to, it's physical touch, right?
So, yeah, the virus can be spread from person to person, and that's through direct contact with the infectious rash or scabs or bodily fluids. You can get it, though, through respiratory secretions, but that's during prolonged face-to-face contact. So that's why we're trying to, you know, inform people and let them know that, you know, if you're in areas where it is a lot of face-to-face or skin-to-skin activity, then you are in a higher risk for contracting the disease if, you know, the other person has it.
Ebony Jackson Shahid is here, and she is the health director in the city of Bridgeport. We're talking about monkeypox. And Ebony, do you find that being in a big city compared to like out in the suburbs, like, do you think anybody who lives in places like Bridgeport, New Haven, Stamford, Norwalk, are they more at risk of contracting this over if you're in a more spread out area? And the only reason I ask that is because, like, when COVID happened, again, totally different. But we found that people like living in more congested areas contracted the virus in bigger numbers.
You know, I wouldn't say that you're more at risk. But I would say if you are involved in certain risky activities, then you may be at higher risk. So that's, you know, like people who like to possibly go to a lot of parties, people who like to, you know, go to public saunas or public pools, who are really involved in a lot of skin-to-skin, face-to-face contact. Those are the people who are more at risk because you can live in a really large city but be someone who likes to stay home. So it really, you know, it really all depends on your activity level.
Mm. That makes a lot of sense. And Ebony, if you were to get it, I know you were saying it should be out of your system. How quickly is it out of your system?
So the illness typically lasts for about 2 to 4 weeks.
Okay.
But there are treatment options. So for most patients, it's usually a mild illness and doesn't really require treatment. But primarily, if you are to get treated, there are antivirals that you can get from your primary care physician, the hospital, and there are 2 vaccines available. So there are treatment options.
Ebony, is this like chicken pox or even like where once you get it, you shouldn't ever get it again?
This is one of those questions because a lot of people think the same thing about COVID. So if you get it once, that you'll never get it again. And that's, you know, proven not to be true. So you can never say that once you get a condition or a virus or a disease that you'll never get it again. So I don't really want to specifically say that because it may not be true.
Okay. But I would think almost like, well, yeah, so yeah, that's tricky. Because I was going to say with chicken pox or when you get, I'm totally blanking out on the other one that's like a gene like that. I got it when I was a few years ago. Oh my gosh, I'm totally blanking on it. And people
are the shingles.
Shingles. There you go. I'm like, I kept thinking was measles. And I'm like, that's not what I'm going for. Shingles. So like once you have that, it would be incredibly rare to get it again. But like with COVID, yeah, I mean, gosh, I've had COVID twice. And I've been fully vaccinated, boosted all the, you know, whole nine yards. So yeah, that's a tough one. So we don't know if monkeypox is more of like a chickenpox shingles condition or it could be like a COVID where you absolutely could get it again.
Well, you know, it's safe to say that for most viruses like this, once you get it once, usually you don't get it again. But, you know, as we've seen with COVID, there are mutations. So, you know, there could be, you know, different strains. You know, so that's why you don't specifically like to say, you know, with a definite that you cannot get it again, because mm-hmm. as you've seen with disease, there are mutations.
Yeah, they're sneaky, sneaky little guys. Last question for you, Ebony. Are there things that you would recommend to our listeners that they should do to avoid getting monkeypox? Obviously, you and I talked about the big one, which is just avoiding risky activity. But, you know, like with COVID, for example, it was all about hygiene, wash your hands, cover your mouth, wear a mask, things like that. Are there things we should be doing actively to avoid getting monkeypox?
I would say limit your activity, you know, at, you know, really dense parties. If you know that somebody has a rash, if you see, you know, pimples or if you see that someone is not feeling well, you know, try to kind of minimize that activity because, you know, as I said previously, it spreads through some of that skin to skin and face to face contact. So basically, you know, just be aware of your surroundings and know that, you know, monkeypox is out there.
Mm-hmm. Ebony Jackson Shahid, I really appreciate having you on this morning, the health director in the city of Bridgeport. Thank you so much for popping back on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Ebony. Talk to you soon.
It's time to get out and explore.
Melissa in the Morning brings you science you may not know on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Welcoming back, David Mestre of Science You May Not Know. Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning.
So I walked in on a very geekish conversation between my father and my out-of-state uncle, they're brothers, and I heard the name David Mestre pop up while they were in conversation. And I thought, are you talking about my David Mestre? And they're like, oh, yes, we are. Yes, we are. They were talking about reusable booster rockets and apparently how SpaceX is making them, but NASA does not. And they said, could you talk to David about this? And I said, yes, I most certainly can. So, David, the floor is yours.
Yeah, well, they picked a good authority for that. I do have to. I'm incredibly flattered to hear that. Yeah, no, I mean, I think one thing that's that is probably important to point out is that NASA actually did reuse some of their space vehicles. I mean, they did actually make an attempt at what's called reusability, and we call that the space shuttle program. And so there were actually parts of the space shuttle system, the space transportation system, that could actually be reused, because it was a way that NASA was trying to get space travel cheaper. You know, if we can get the shuttle orbiter, could we reuse that? Our solid rocket boosters, could we reuse that? The problem was that it was still expensive. It was incredibly expensive to run that program.
Sure.
And so you know, one of the things that happens with NASA is that, you know, NASA is a very top-down kind of design organization. You know, they design a shuttle. And then what they do is they contract out pieces of it and say, you know, we need someone to build the orbiter. We need someone to build the solid rocket boosters and all that. And so when that happens, you know, companies will bid. And then when they bid, they invariably, what happens is that they find out that they don't, it's not enough money to actually do this. And so they have cost overruns. And so before you know it, you just blow up the cost of these things. And just a typical shuttle launch could probably cost $1 billion just to do this.
That's insane.
And so it just wasn't sustainable. You know, people wonder, you know, we had all this technology to go to the moon. Why can't we go back? Because going back means, you know, we'd have to build all this hardware again, and we only use this hardware once, you know. So even then, in the 1960s, you know, NASA was trying to come up with how do we actually make space travel cost effective. And so an idea came into NASA's head, some people at NASA, and there was a huge amount of resistance to this, was that, okay, we're just going to give money to a company and let them figure it out.
Hmm.
And so when that happened, they told these companies, okay, you're going to do this, but we're only going to give you a certain amount of money to research and develop a vehicle to send astronauts into what's called low Earth orbit. That's kind of low-hanging fruit in terms of space travel. Just get it up into space and bring the astronauts back. And
okay.
We'll give you a destination, the International Space Station, but you have to do this cheaply. And you're only going to get so much money, and you're not going to get any more. And so
good luck, bye!
Yeah.
Oh,
so there were only
gosh.
Two companies that kind of really were in the running was SpaceX and Boeing. But nobody believed in SpaceX because, you know, it's, you know, you got, who's Elon Musk? Who's this dude? You know, he just sold PayPal and he thinks he can start a rocket company. So people put their money actually in Boeing. And some people even believe that if it wasn't for Boeing being part of this, what's called the commercial crew program, SpaceX probably wouldn't have had a chance because people had more confidence in Boeing attempting this than SpaceX. And it flipped.
Wow,
it was SpaceX that actually was successful. And Boeing is still trying to, you know, use the money that it had because it can't get any more from NASA to build their Starliner. And they've had a huge amount of problems just trying to do this. And so, you know, but the thing that NASA does is that NASA has a lot of expertise. And so, you know, SpaceX and Boeing and all these other companies, you know, you can use this expertise. So how do I build a rocket? Well, NASA's built rockets before, so we'll give you this information on how to do that, you know, because that's all government tax dollars that went into developing this.
Interesting.
Yeah, so right now, everybody is trying to get into the reusability game.
Yeah, that's the trend for everything, really, in life. Yes,
yeah,
sure.
Because we need to be able to make space travel cheaper. And so, you know, it's turned into kind of a billionaire's game. You know, you've got Amazon and Jeff Bezos with their Blue Origin program. You've got Elon Musk with their SpaceX program. But they've been able to put together teams of people to be able to really kind of push this technology and really push the envelope in terms of being able to develop these reusable rockets. But a lot of it is, you know, who's the customer for a reusable rocket? Ah, that's NASA.
Exactly. Right. That's it. So, okay. That's interesting. Wow. Yeah. I didn't know
So it's not that NASA isn't developing reusable rockets.
Right.
What NASA's doing is that it's letting private companies develop these reusable rockets, and they're guaranteeing these companies that we'll be your customer, you know? So once you've got a guarantee that NASA is going to be your customer, if you can demonstrate that, and then you can get investors and other private entities to come together and says, okay, we believe you. You've tested this rocket, and now we know that you've got a reliable customer to do that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where it's now. Other countries are attempting this, but you know, the United States has a very strong lead in terms of being able, and SpaceX is light years ahead of any other company, really, in terms of this, these reusable rockets. They've already launched like over 100 rockets, and they recovered and relaunched about like maybe 90 of them. You know,
wow.
So
that's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
That is really crazy. Wow. Well, I learned an awful lot about this, so now I feel bad about calling my uncle and my father geeks. Okay. So
no,
I take
well,
it back.
You know, I think I accept that title, geek. You know, we just kind of.
I mean, I do too. Honestly, there's a lot of times on this show where I'm like, well, Melissa, pull myself back. You're looking a little cray cray. So
yeah, if they're at the barbecue and you know the stump Dave Mestre, I'll see if I can answer their questions.
Yeah, you should be at the next one, David Mestre. Please stop on by to the Sheketoff household. We have a fun time over there, and we talk about.
Tell them I can be on speed dial too if they need that.
There you go. Yeah, we'll just talk about space. That sounds amazing. David Mestre, a science you may not know. Always love having you on the show. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Take care.
All right. Talk to you soon.